So, as I said, tonight I want to start actually talking about the actual form of the practice. And this is quite an interesting practice, I think, and partly because it's such a contrast to traditional Vipassana, you know, mindfulness practice, and partly because it's so heart-centered. This is all about focusing on changing your heart and how your heart mind and how you react to things and to people. And we have this sort of natural tendency to be loving individuals. That's the basis of this whole practice, is that it's our natural tendency to be a loving individual. And that natural tendency gets distorted by our reactive mind and how we react against things and are pushing against things and are averse to things and averse to people. And so what we're trying to do with this practice is cultivate this more loving attitude of loving kindness. And there's this famous story. There's a teacher called Nisargadatta, who was around the time of Christ, in that sort of era, 2,000 years ago, quite famous. And interestingly enough, he's known as both a teacher in some yoga traditions and in some Buddhist traditions. He's sort of this transitional character. And apparently one of his students came to him and complained about his mother, that my mother won't let me love her. And Nisargadatta said, she can't stop you. I was like, oh, it's like, she can't stop you. There's nothing to stop you from loving anyone except you. That's the only thing that gets in the way. And that's a really important thing to understand at the very beginning here. And here's the next interesting thing. So we're going to, over the weeks of this course, keep adding what are called categories of beings. Right? We're going to sort of keep expanding where we're sending metta to. But tonight, and for the next whole week of practice, we're going to focus on ourself. Just ourself, no one else. And this, it seems a little contradictory. Because, you know, then you know, last week we were talking with the Metta Sutta, and the Metta Sutta was talking about, you know, having this feeling for all beings, right? But here's the thing. If we can't feel thoughts of loving kindness for ourselves, it's very difficult to feel them for anyone else. It's very difficult to have feelings of loving kindness for anything or anyone if we don't have them for ourselves first. But at the same time, you know, depending on your nature, we're so busy taking care of everybody else all the time that we forget, oh, wait, I got to take care of myself first. So that's where we start. We start with things. And this isn't just sort of, it sort of sounds like pop psychology or something, right? But here's, I want to read you a little passage here. This is from the Samyutta Nikaya. And this is the Buddha talking to a famous King Pasenadi and his queen. And they've come to him and asked, is there anyone more dear to you than yourself? I don't know. Sounds like a radical question. Is there anyone more dear to you than yourself? And this is the Buddha's answer. There is no one, great king, more dear to you than yourself. But is there anyone, great king, more dear to you than yourself? For me too, Malika, there's no one more dear than myself. So this is the king and the queen talking to each other. And then they come to the Buddha, and the Buddha says, he answers them when they ask this question. Here's, he answers them in verse. This is a whole section of things where he, the Buddha uses verse to respond. Having traversed all quarters with the mind, one finds none anywhere dearer than oneself. Likewise, each person holds himself more dear. Hence, one who loves himself should not harm others. Interesting thought. It's like, if we really have thoughts of loving kindness towards ourselves, and then, and we realize that everyone else just wants to be the same thing. There's, you're not going to meet anyone in the world who doesn't want to be happy. Right? It's like the universal thing. So if we can have thoughts of loving kindness for ourselves, then it sort of is just going to naturally sort of leak out into the world. We're going to see everyone else has, they're just human beings like us. They want exactly the same thing. It's much easier for us to have thoughts of loving kindness towards them once we have that feeling for ourselves. And that's basically what the Buddha is saying. So this isn't pop psychology. This is the Buddha saying exactly the same thing. This happens to be the pop psychology matches what the Buddha says. How interesting. So how do we do this? How do we actually cultivate thoughts of loving kindness? And this is a meditation practice, right? On all meditation practices have what's called a meditation object, a form that you follow. And for metta, that meditation object is a set of phrases. Now, I want to say something here. Some of you may have practiced metta in other ways than what I'm about to say. That's okay. If you've been practicing metta for a long time and you have a certain form that you're comfortable with, that's fine. But here's what I want to say is this is what I've been taught. This is what great teachers in my lineage have taught me, several of them in different times. So I was saying this essentially the same thing. So I have a great trust in this teaching. And basically what we're going to do is have this set of phrases that we're going to constantly repeat just over and over. So the object of the meditation isn't the breath or the body or anything like that. It's these actual phrases we're going to repeat. So the phrases, first of all, the phrases themselves, this is the simple form of the phrases. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. So these are, by safe, it means, you know, do I want to be in this, live in a world or live in a space in a container where I feel I'm not ever feeling threatened. May I be happy? Well, who doesn't want to be happy, as I just said, right? May I be healthy? Once again, who doesn't want that? And may I live with ease means, may I live in such a way that all my basic needs are met. My basic material needs in the world are met. And if you think about it, if you always felt safe, happy, healthy, and at ease, it'd be pretty much ideal conditions. So when we're saying these phrases, we're wishing ourselves or eventually others ideal conditions to live a life so they can have time to practice. We're wishing that this that they have, everyone has this environment that's perfect for them to practice in. But they don't have anything, they're not, no worries about anything. So they're never getting distracted by worries and those sorts of things. The problem, of course, well, here's one of the problems anyway, is we sort of get caught in this space of, well, I don't deserve this. Or I should be more concerned about others. I shouldn't be concerned about myself. You know, what's wrong with me for being so concerned about myself? Just let those thoughts be there. they're going to be there. Those are natural human reactions, but just ignore them as best you can and understand that it's really important that we start with ourselves and build up this energy. Also, the beauty of this is for a lot of people, not for everybody. For a lot of people, this is the easiest person to feel thoughts of loving kindness towards ourselves. For some people, it's actually quite difficult. So some of you might actually struggle with this. That's okay too. I want to read something Sharon Salzberg says. So a lot of what I'm teaching is based on this book called Loving Kindness by Sharon Salzberg. So if you want an actual text, you want to go study sometime, this is an excellent place. I've actually studied this practice with Sharon, and it's quite amazing to be with her. Okay. So she's talking about this idea, what the Buddha said. So directly seeing the natural radiance of our minds, our natural tendency to be full of loving kindness, reteaches us our own loveliness. To allude to a phrase in the Zen tradition, this is our original face before we were born, before we were born into identification with a separate, limited self. Recognizing our own power to love points us directly to recognizing this primordial radiance. Confidence in our innate potential to be loving human beings empowers the cultivation of metta. Our potential to love is very real, and it's somehow not destroyed, no matter what we experience. All the mistakes we might make, all the times that we are caught in reaction, all the times we have caused pain, all the times we have suffered. Throughout everything, our potential to love remains intact and pure. Through practicing metta in meditation and in daily life, we cultivate this potential. Love joins with our intention as partners in healing ourselves and our world. In some ways, our greatest ally in this practice of love is our wish to be happy. This functions as a homing instinct for freedom when we can unite it with understanding what actually brings us happiness. But sometimes we may feel that we do not really deserve happiness. We may feel almost ashamed of wanting it. Yet this wish is one of the finest things about us, opening the door to transcending our limited lives. Pretty strong language, I think. One of the key words here is cultivate. You know, the thing about metta is we sort of, if we're not careful, get caught in, well, you know, I'm a good person. Why do I have to cultivate anything? You know, why do I have to do anything other than just be who I am, this good person who I am? Well, the truth is, yeah, you're all probably good people, but sometimes we're not so good. Sometimes we're reactive. Sometimes we are cause harm in the world. And often all that harm we might cause in the world starts at the level of mind. We think and then we act or react often. And what metta is literally teaching us to do, what we're cultivating, is this ability to always start from a place of loving kindness in all of our reactions and relationships. And we can be pretty harsh on ourselves. This is that's why having thoughts of loving kindness towards ourselves is the place to start. Just like we can be harsh with other people, we're often quite harsh with ourselves, very judgmental of ourselves. And this is sort of a way of shifting that. There's another interesting thought about this. I mean, when you think about what we're doing, we're actually going to be repeating these phrases over and over and over again. We're literally filling our heart mind with wholesome thoughts. If we're really concentrated, which is part of the practice, is to concentrate. If we're really concentrated and we really fill our hearts and minds with thoughts of loving kindness, there's no room for unwholesomeness. We're literally creating this energy by cultivating this thought of loving kindness. We're changing the patterns of our mind, which tend to be reactive. Instead, we're saying, okay, we know the mind's reactive, so let's react in this wholesome way. Every time we encounter anyone, let's be react in this wholesome way with thoughts of loving kindness towards them. Sort of a radical idea, I think. but that's the idea. It's like, if I can just fill my mind with thoughts of loving kindness, then that's great. So this is, and this is, the other thing is, this is both a formal practice, but also, you know, so we're going to sit and do it. I mean, so your sitting practice, this could be your sitting practice. But at the same time, remember that this is like life. This is a life practice. I mean, traditionally, in the sutta, the Buddha says practice, you know, walking, standing, seated, or lying down, right? All the time. So if you were on retreat, you would literally wake up and start repeating these phrases and repeat them until you fell asleep. Not that practical in our daily lives, but there we are in our daily lives, catching ourselves because we're being mindful. We're all mindful in certain ways, being reactive towards something or to ourselves. Right then, you just stop and repeat the phrases. Just take a 1 minute metta break and repeat the phrases 3 times or 4 times. It just shifts the habit of the mind. So it's a very powerful practice, not only as a seated formal practice, but as a day-to-day life practice as well. Okay. So we're going to repeat these phrases. I want to spend more time talking about these phrases in a second. But at the same time, as we repeat the phrases in the formal practice, we're going to repeat the phrases. But at the same time, we're going to try to visualize ourselves at some time when that's we felt safe, happy, healthy, and at ease. Sometime when we were just really happy. You know, it might be, you know, you might, maybe it's like, if you're like me, I love being way up high above the tree line, sitting on the side of a mountain, just looking at the scenery. There's something with that energy that's like, so often that's one thing I do sometimes when I'm practicing. I visualize myself just sitting there in the sun, looking at this beautiful scenery. Some of you might be the ocean. Some of you might be sitting in your backyard looking at your garden. It could be, you know, playing with your grandchildren. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter at all what it is you choose. It's just some, you have to visualize yourself as being happy, safe, healthy, at ease. Actually see that clearly in the mind. Because that's what we're trying to reproduce over and over and over and over again, is that happy space. Okay, so then what about the phrases themselves? Well, this is where you get to be quite creative, I think is the word I would use. There are, like I said, there's these 4 phrases. May I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with ease. First of all, should be 4 phrases. Always have those 4 different ideas covered by the 4 phrases. Like as I said, you might have a different form of practice where you just have 5 phrases or 3 phrases or something. That's okay. But this is way more than 1 phrase. We want to, because that makes us pay more attention and makes and causes us to concentrate more deeply, because there's a little bit more we have to keep together. So we have these 4 phrases. Also, that covers all these different areas that we need when they're all, we have them all together. This is these ideal conditions I was talking about earlier. But some people like to have these phrases be a bit more explicit, have a different flavor to them. So for instance, instead of may I be safe, I know people who their phrase is, may I be safe from inner and outer harm. It's just a little more expressive, a little more information to the phrase. And some people like that kind of thing. They like to be a little more precise. May I be happy? This is an interesting one. I have a teacher who I really respect, who said she could never feel comfortable saying, may I be happy. It's sort of felt kind of greedy to her. It was like asking for too much. So she says, may I be content? Because content could mean, well, I think some things aren't that great, but I'm okay with them. Yeah, it's a different flavor of the same idea. It's a, from her point of view, a less greedy version of that wish. It says, may I be content instead of may I be happy. May I be healthy? This is an interesting one. Some of us are a little bit older. Some of us may not be already have health issues. You know, or you know, it's like some days you don't feel that healthy. So some people I know, and I have worked with this to a certain extent, may I be as healthy as I can be? Which is, for some people, a much more realistic thing to ask for. May I be as healthy as I can be? It says, so just may I be healthy. And then, may I live with ease? Some people like to sort of amplify that, and you can do that. So what I'm pointing at is we need four phrases. What your version of those four phrases are is up to you. And sometimes it might take you, if you've not done this practice before, you sort of experiment with different phrases. You'll do a sitting period. I know, I think I'll use this phrase. By the end of the sitting period, it's like, I'll try the next. You know, so you sort of work until you find what works for you. So it's this practice has experimenting in it more than some other practices do. Another thing about this is maybe you'd prefer to do this in some language other than English. Fine. Just translate these into whatever your personal language is, you know, your language of origin, the language you're most comfortable with. Doesn't make any difference what language it's in. I mean, these were originally, I think, in Thai. These are translations because this comes from the Thai school of Theravada. So who knows? You know, just whatever suits you in terms of what makes sense from your point to make it personal. You want to make this as personal as possible. Then there's one other layer to this in terms of what we're doing when we practice. And that is, we don't want the phrases to become sort of mechanical. So we really want to pay attention, not only to staying concentrated and repeating the phrases and keeping them going, but we also want to pay a lot of attention to what they actually mean to us. Because for each of us, being safe, for instance, might mean totally different things. You know, I'm a 6'4", 220-pound guy. Me feeling safe and you feeling safe might be two different things, for instance, you know, or. You know, so we sort of tune into, what does that mean for me? And it's suggested that before you start any practice session, you spend a minute or two sometimes sort of contemplating the meanings. What does it mean to me to be safe, happy, healthy, and to live with ease? I mean, some people live with ease means, oh, well, I got to have, all these things. And for other people, it's like, well, I don't need a lot of those things. I can live a simpler life. And that's okay. We all find what works for us, you know, without worrying about it too much. So we have to say the phrases, visualize ourselves, and have some sense of the meaning of the phrases as we say them. So we say them fairly slowly so we can sort of savor the meaning, right? And if you find yourself as you're doing the practice that the phrases do become sort of mechanicals, like da-dump, 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 you're just sort of saying them, pause, even stop, go back and tune into the meaning of the phrases, tune into that visualization of yourself, and then start again. Much better that than to sort of just like grind it out. This is supposed to be heart-centered, not mind-centered, though there is a lot of mind involved, right? Because, and this is the other side of this practice, this is an incredibly deep concentration practice. This practice really teaches you how to concentrate, because you have to keep the four phrases going. You have to remember what you're doing over and over and over and over again. Keep the phrases going and keep them in the right order. And you'll find your mind just like in between one phrase and another, your concentration is going to go and you'll be off. Oh yeah, then you go back to the very beginning and you start all over again. If you're going halfway through a set of four and you get lost, just start again and start again and start again. So this is like any other meditation practice. We keep starting over and over again. But understand that's perfectly normal to struggle and not always be as concentrated as we want to be. And you just go back and start the phrases again to tune in. And like I said, if to do that, you have to sort of go, exactly what do these mean for me? And sort of tune into the energy of the phrases from your point of view. That's a skillful thing to do sometimes, just to stop and contemplate, think about briefly, what do these phrases mean? And then start again. Because as we go along later on, we start adding in other people into our practice, then we have to start thinking about, well, what does this phrase mean for them? Because what it means for you might be different than what it means for them, and so on. So you can see there's layers to this. So that's the actual form of the practice. One other thing I want to mention, and that is the idea that people get when they do this practice, that somehow or other, they're supposed to like just gush with this beautiful, sweet feelings of loving kindness. Like it's like, that's the idea we get in our head of how things should be, right? Yeah, and that might happen. Hooray for you if it does. And it might happen sometimes and not other times too. Hooray for you. But don't worry if it doesn't. Because what we're doing, the image that Sharon uses all the time is we're planting seeds in the mind. We're planting these seeds by repeating these phrases over and over and over again. We're planting seeds of loving kindness. And in their own time, they're going to sprout. And some of us have a nature that's sort of warm and glowy, and some of us have a nature that's sort of more sort of cool. And so your experience of the actual feelings that's going to generate is going to be different. I'll be very honest with you. When I first encountered this practice, 17, 18 years ago, I went, sort of didn't grab me. You know, I didn't think this was like, it wasn't, I'm one of these cool people, right? I'm very sort of calm and steady and serious, you know. And this sort of seemed like, eh. And then through a series of events, I became convinced that I really needed to understand this practice. And I did a month-long retreat where I just did this practice, nothing but this practice for an entire month, literally from the moment I woke up to when I fell asleep, or at least that's what I tried to do. And yeah, there was some feeling there, and it was kind of sweet. But I was still like, no, this is, you know, I really like this practice because it's such a good concentration practice, is what I was thinking in my mind, right? And I'd been home for 3 or 4 days after this retreat, and I'd made this my only practice, so I was still practicing every day in my daily practice. And I went out to Whole Foods, just plain old, you know, like to a grocery store, right? And I had made a little list of like 10 or 11 things. I wasn't going to be, you know, I wasn't going to be there for a long time. I didn't want to be out in the world too much. I was still sort of landing after being on a long retreat. But I had this list, and I went into the store, and this is like about 11 in the morning. Because that's when you go to Whole Foods at 11 in the morning, it's not that busy, which is another reason I went there at that time. But one thing about Whole Foods at 11 in the morning is it's full of parents and little kids. And I'd be sort of like in an aisle putting something in my little trolley, and I'd encounter some small child maybe sitting in, you know, one of those trolleys where they've got the legs sticking out, or, you know, maybe walking around a little bit. And I would just like stop and hang out with these little kids. And I'd sort of be a little goofy and, you know, make faces and smile and talk a little bit if they're a little bit older. And I couldn't resist these little kids. And here, the interesting thing was, the parents of these little kids were totally cool. It wasn't like, what's this old guy doing talking to my kids? And it was like, there was something about where I was at. I don't know. But it took me like 25 minutes to buy 11 things at Whole Foods. And as I was walking out the door, I went, oh, this is that feeling they were talking about. This is what happened. You know, just like, I was just like full of this energy. And it was just like going out, and all the little kids are really sensitive to this sort of thing. And they just all picked up on it right away. And they were ready to just goof along with me and have a great time. Not one kid was like, hey, go away, weird man. It's like, everything was cool. And that's just the power of the practice. And so don't be concerned if it doesn't feel like much is happening. Believe me, stuff is happening. Really powerful stuff is happening if you really do the practice, which comes to the last part. If you have another form of meditation practice you're used to doing, perhaps you do some sort of Vipassana or other sort of mindfulness practice, what I'd recommend is for the next 7 or 8 weeks that instead you do this practice. Just forget about the mindfulness practice completely and just do this practice. That's the only way you'll really get deep into it, is by doing this practice and nothing else. And really sort of soak yourself in it. It's the jumping with both feet method of learning a practice. But it's for metta, I think it's really important that we don't just go, oh, well, so I'll do this for 5 minutes every day. You got to really go at it. Commit yourself to doing this and make this your principal practice. I go back and forth in my own life and my own practice. I go back and forth between, you know, insight, mindfulness, meditation, and metta. And I'll spend times when metta is my only practice, and I'll spend times when the insight practice is my only practice. When I'm teaching this course, for instance, which I do from time to time, metta is my only practice right now. That's all I'm doing, just metta practice, nothing else. So don't feel like, oh, I'll lose my insight capability. Don't worry about that at all. You're really going to be amazed at how much more concentrated your mind is, how you've learned to concentrate more deeply when you go back to the mindfulness practice. So don't worry about that at all. Just make this, I'm not going to tell you have to, but that's my strong recommendation, that you just make this your practice and see what happens. Okay, so before we actually practice, I want to just pause and make sure, because I've just downloaded an enormous amount of information. Does anyone have any questions they want to ask before we actually take a practice period for half an hour? We're going to actually practice metta for self and see what happens. So if you have any questions at all about what I've said, or how to practice, now is the time. So Pranita, you have a question because you turned your mic on.
Yes, I do. So you said, I thought metta was a type of vipassana.
No, it's related.
Oh, okay.
It yeah. comes from the same tradition.
Okay.
And it takes mindfulness to a certain extent to practice metta, because you have to keep remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in Pali, the word that gets translated as mindfulness, the Pali word also translates as remembering, sati, translates just as remembering. So you have to keep remembering that this is what you're doing. So okay. there's a mindfulness aspect to it, but that's not the emphasis at all. The image I like to use is there's these two forms, mindfulness and metta, and they're like two different doors into the same house, or perhaps the same temple. When you get to the middle of the temple, they're the same. And that's been my experience. As you go deeper into both of these practices, what happens at the level of mind is very, very similar. But at the out here on the edge by the door, they seem really, really different.
Okay.
They're just two different ways of doing it. This practice, I find people are sort of connect to it more because it's more heart-centered. It's more like in the world. I'm dealing with my life in the world more. And for some people, that's really an important aspect of having a practice. Some people
Thank
are
you.
Really attracted more to the seriousness of insight practice. And these are both, I'm not saying one's better than the other, they're just two different things. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, good. Any other questions? Pranita, I'll ask you to turn your mic off too, please. Oh, thank you. Good. Other questions anybody has? Okay, Rita, go ahead, turn on your mic.
Yes. I decided to take this course with you because I was thinking by the end of the year that I was going to do metta for the first 2 months of the year. And one thing that I noticed different from the insight practice is that doing metta, my concentration is much deeper than just focus on the breath. And even when it's mechanical, like you were saying, I didn't know I had to stop and to connect with my heart to really feel the meaning of the phrases. Even mechanical, the concentration is deeper.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Yeah. When I first went into very deep states of concentration, it was doing metta practice.
Jhanas?
Yeah.
I heard that.
This was the practice that first took me there.
Mm.
So yeah, okay. that's the other side of this whole thing, is this really builds up our ability to concentrate. So we then take that ability to concentrate, take it back to our insight practice, and it'll be different. Mm. So it's like, one of those balancing acts. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rita.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think that's it for questions. So now we're going to so remember four phrases and just repeat them over and over and over. You start at the very beginning. I'll start you off and then I'll turn off my mic because I'll just practice with you. So what you want to do is you want to start simply by settling into your chair. So this is just like insight practice. There's a little more emphasis in metta on being really comfortable, on not having to sort of, force yourself into any sort of rigid, upright posture. Yeah, it's really hard to have thoughts of love and kindness if you're uncomfortable. So start just by having that comfortable, calm mind space, and then settle in by tuning in to that image of yourself at some time when you are happy and safe and healthy and at ease. Yeah. And it might be a younger self. It might be what was going on this afternoon. It's just some, if you want to choose an image, and maybe, some of you are like me, I have trouble visualizing big complicated things, but I can just sort of see myself sort of sitting there with a smile on my face, and that's plenty. Don't worry if that's all you can do is see someone, you see in your face with a smile on it. That's a pretty good start. And then contemplate the meaning of the phrases. What does it mean to be safe and happy and healthy and at ease for you? Which might, like I said, it might be different than anyone else here. And then you just simply start repeating the phrases, and I'll say them 3 or 4 times out loud to sort of get you going. And then I'm going to turn off my mic and you can just repeat them yourself. So you don't want to rush the phrases. So it's, may I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Then just continue repeating the phrases.